Finding the right healthcare partner for your business isn't easy, but Hancock Wellbeing at Work can help. We're a different kind of program that combines employer clinics with a wellness strategy. And in a lot of cases, we can deliver greater health benefits at a lower cost. See why well-being for your employees is well-being for your business at HancockWellbeingAtWork.org.
Good morning. It is Monday, April 29th. It's 5 minutes after 11. You're listening to Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. So we're what, a month away from the Indy 500, and the IndyCar has made an announcement.
Oh,
no political branding on any vehicles at the 500.
Oh, that's so interesting.
This after it's being reported that there was a request put in by Trump and also RFK Jr.
Yeah, so basically what they have said, and it's pretty hard to blame them, that they said, so we're not wading into this. We want to be universally, we want the sport itself.
Mm-hmm. To be the focus?
To be the focus and be the reason the sport itself lives or dies. And, you know, if we're going to talk about this in the sense of, you know, these other media organizations or entertainment organizations or professional sports teams taking a knee or whatever, then we got to kind of be consistent on this and say that's probably a good thing, even when it's our guy. And I'm sure, because clearly it became pretty clear that Trump and RFK wanted to advertise. Mm-hmm. It's the world's the world's largest single-day sporting event. Try to say that nine times fast. The world's largest single-day sporting event. Mm-hmm. Naturally, you've got hundreds of thousands of people on the track itself. It is broadcast all over the world. On the radio broadcast, you've got them saying the names of the car. The Donald Trump car,
right?
You know, run by so-and-so. And so if you're, you know, one of these campaigns, it's kind of probably some good value and good exposure. But I kind of see where IndyCar's coming with this and putting the kibosh on it right out of the gate. I'm kind of for that, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, so Racer reported this. They said that all the requests were denied and that IndyCar does not approve sponsorships associated with elected officials, candidates for political office, or even political action committees, so not even PACs. Nobody can do anything. But can you imagine if you're at the track, think about this scenario. You're in the grandstands, and all of a sudden, the Trump car goes whizzing by all of the possibly Trump flags or American flags at all. Yeah. Yeah. You know, Trump car. And then, being that we're in red Indiana, mm-hmm. and then a Biden car
sure.
drives by, boo, you know,
I mean,
I can see it. And the potential for civil unrest to take place as opposing sides express their opinions.
You know, and IndyCar probably made a decision, rightfully so, and I don't know exactly how the whole financial aspect works. We could probably have some people on. By the way, we got to get Mark James back on, our friend, the voice of the Indy 500. We're getting into that season. We always have him on before the 500. But where they probably say, look, whatever money a team is going to make is going to pale in comparison. Because let's face it, it's probably going to be a lower level team that is going to need to engage in seeking political candidates, you know, some person who's desperately trying to get in the 500, they're going to be a back-end car. And the 500 is probably, an IndyCar as a collective is probably just saying, look, whatever money you're going to get, that don't really help us at all. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's probably not a front runner. You know, it's not Dixon
yeah.
that's going to be doing this. And so they probably said, we are not dealing with this drama. And like I said, I support this 100%. It's your organization. Keep all the politics out of it.
Right.
Do it for both sides.
Let's just enjoy racing.
Let the race be the race.
Yeah. So last year, the race drew over 300,000 fans, expected to be just as much this year. So I agree with you. I think it's a smart move. Don't put anybody's security at risk. I mean, it's already a major event to keep secure and to keep everybody safe. And then if you've got tempers flaring and, you know, you're on different sides of the aisle, that's just a recipe for disaster. So it's probably a smart move.
This isn't our rainbows segment, but mm-hmm. let's talk about something good for a second, though, which is that IndyCar, and this is totally credit to, you know, the people who run that organization. It's a credit to Penske. It's a credit to Doug Bowles. It's a credit to all of those people. To come out of that dark era of IndyCar,
yeah.
where you're not even sure, is this going to last? Is this going to exist? You know, and even beyond the split, I mean, it took, you know, a decade and a half or more. They totally not only revitalize the Indy 500, you could make a compelling case that you are entering a new golden era of the Indy 500 when you couple in, you know, it's always a great race and people went for the racing, but when you, what they've, you know, kind of made the whole week of the 500 and the carb day and all of these things and the improvements to the motor speedway and the, just quite frankly, the improvements to the city or the town of Speedway itself, it's really, those guys deserve a ton of credit because they have brought the thing back. And I'll tell you what this kind of gives me hope for is, obviously I'm a golf fan and I see golf is in a dark place right now because of this LIV PGA Tour split. And you just simply every week don't have some of the best players in the world competing against each other. And the LIV Tour is a joke. I mean, it's like party central. And so those guys are just there for the guaranteed payout for the most part. And then you got the PGA guys who it's a fraction of the talent they were competing against. It gives me hope that hopefully, much like with IndyCar, that the thing can eventually come back together. And maybe out of that comes a new golden era for golf. IndyCar's done awesome.
It's very rare when somebody says, hey, we're going to be stronger and better than ever, that they actually do it. So when was it that Penske bought it? Was it 2018, 2019? And then right after that, COVID.
Yeah.
And he had to have been questioning his investment at that point. Did I make the right decision here?
Do you have the list of things that they said they're banning? Again, I realize I'm hitting you with that. You just gave a list, right, of things that they, like, it's packs, it's all, it's these different things that they're putting the ban on. Because somebody in our YouTube chat asked a good question, and I just wondered if they covered that under the listing and if you have that.
So this comes from an IndyCar spokesperson, and they said IndyCar does not approve sponsorships associated with elected officials.
Uh-huh.
Candidates for political office or PACs, political action committees.
So this is probably covered on that because Jim in the YouTube chat, I thought this was a fair question. What about like something like Right to Life, pro-choice, breast cancer awareness, men's health care? So like where does that kind of stop? Well, it sounds like if there is in any way a political affiliation with that. Mm-hmm. So like Right to Life, I think is a political, has a political action arm to them. So it would probably be covered under that. The pro-abortion groups, it's a political action arm, so that would probably be covered under that in terms of the ban.
It sounds to me like IndyCar just wants to stay clear of politics.
Yeah, I just thought that was
let's focus on race.
Where does it go? Where, on the other hand, like breast cancer awareness is not a political action thing, or men's health care, prostate, get your prostate checked, whatever. Mm-hmm. That's not a political action.
Oh, give them time, Rob.
Well, you know, I'm just saying like there's got to be some common sense applied to this. So I just thought that was a good question.
All right, and let's do the other popular sport in town.
All right, ready to do this?
Yes, I am.
All right, 2, 3, 4.
Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, basketball, give me the ball because I'm gonna dunk it. Ba-ba-ba-ba-ba, basketball, give me the ball because I'm gonna dunk it.
Basketball theme. Okay, so the Pacers just announced that they are going to head to Paris for 2 regular season games in January of 25. They're going to play the San Antonio Spurs.
Well, that's a big deal. Well, first of all, let's get something out here and make it very clear. He went to Paris, one of the best Jimmy Buffett songs, highly underrated. You put that on our Mount Rushmore of Jimmy Buffett songs. Mm-hmm. Everybody go out and listen to that. Wait till noon. We don't care what you do during Cat's show. But the fact is, that's a big deal that the Pacers, because they're playing the Spurs.
Mm-hmm.
The Spurs have Victor Wembanyama, who is sort of the kind of, he was obviously the number one pick. He's this giant of a man from France, going to be rookie of the year, kind of the new, they're hoping to make him the new face of the NBA now that LeBron and Steph Curry and those guys are kind of phasing out a little bit. And so it's a big deal that they said, hey, we're taking the guy with the star power, which is obviously, he's from France, which is why they're taking him. But we're going to put the Pacers, because there is, you know, I'm guessing in part because they have some sort of universal sort of appeal. Now, Siakam, I think, is French too, isn't he? Is that right? Anyway, you filibuster for a second.
Well, yeah, they say the reason that they're going there is because of their global popularity. Now, these games are going to take place on Thursday, January 23rd, and also Saturday, January 25th. And if you go to NBAExperiences.com, you get the official NBA Experience package. Now, this includes tickets to the game, premium hospitality, VIP events, hotel accommodations, and more. I should really click on it to see how much that costs. But that's quite an experience to go across the pond, go to Paris, to see the Pacers play.
I have no idea why I thought in my mind Pascal Siakam might be French. He's Cameroon, so negate that. But clearly they want to draw. They're not going to put one of the worst teams in the league over there. They're trying to create some sort of marquee matchup. It's not like how the National Football League does things where it's like, we're going to pick two turd teams and send them over there because we'll sell out a stadium no matter who it is. The NBA is trying to market itself on a global scale. And so that really is, hey, look at this, Casey, two positive stories in one segment. We didn't even do the rainbow
theme. There's many levels, by the way, which you can purchase. You can do the Hall of Fame level, which includes an NBA Legends dinner, your hospitality, your on-court photo. And then it goes down to a legend level, an MVP level, a playmaker, a sophomore, and then your rookie level.
Playmaker.
Right.
We're going to make you feel bad about buying these tickets and let you in at the rookie level.
Now, when Hammer was in here earlier, he was talking about how he went to Friday's game, which was that overtime game, and I thought this was kind of fun. They had Miles Turner mic'd up during that game, so you could hear everything that he was saying to his teammates, you know, cheering when he was on the bench, even when he was on the court. And this is his reaction during that thrilling overtime win against the Bucks in game 3.
Stay locked in. You're in a good zone right now. Stay locked in.
That's what it's about right now, man. Come on. Come on.
We're winning the game right now.
Facts. Come on.
We're winning the game right
now. Come on. Time. And a one.
Yeah. It's kind of like when you can hear the quarterback during a football game. You hear him making his calls.
He was very excited they won that game.
Yeah, well, I mean, can you
I wouldn't have
him?
Expected that from him.
It improved his play,
hey,
apparently.
Kudos on him
game.
Not using any bad language.
I know. I was nervous there, but we didn't have to edit that at all. And one last basketball tidbit that we've got to share with you, and that is that Caitlin Clark was practicing training day, you know, the camp on Sunday, and this is what she had to say about that.
Got a few workouts under my belt. I think that definitely helped. So not coming into training camp completely blind. And it was a good first day. It was hard, but that's what you expect for these practices. And just fun to get out there with all the girls and get ready for Friday, honestly.
I wonder.
Your season starts really fast.
Yeah, it does. And I was thinking about this. She's doing the training camp this weekend and still has to go back to Iowa and graduate from that. I wonder if she's purchased her white dress that she
I got a
wear.
Feeling, you know, we get
she's going to skip that.
We get tickets to all these things like that they'll put out in a lottery.
Mm-hmm.
By the way, can we say what weak sauce, and we love Dion, our big boss, but can we say what weak sauce it was that he picked the Pacers ticket giveaway at the staff meeting based on your birthday? Like, whose birthday is closest to this day, which is how Kevin won the tickets.
Yeah, right. Lucked out.
I mean, let's face it. We had no chance.
No chance.
I mean, it wasn't some sort of lethal lottery or, you know, whatever.
Yeah.
I just think Dion could really make it up to us based on, like, you know, if you have a birthday, say, in December, you're automatically entered to the Caitlin Clark first game ticket giveaway.
Or maybe the Pacers game in Paris.
Yes,
that would be.
I'd also be fine.
I'll be entered in that drawing.
I'll compete for that.
All right. It's Kendall and Casey. It's 93 WIBC.
He was impressive.
Yeah.
Young and aggressive.
Well, there's that Jimmy Buffett
saving
song.
Saving the world on his
by far the best Jimmy Buffett song. Is not even close.
He better than Son of a Sailor?
Totally.
You think so?
All the stuff going on and he went to Paris. You know me, Casey.
Yeah.
If a character is not getting his heart ripped out and held in front of his face, it's just not a. It's just not for me.
It's just not a good song.
If there's not some.
You like the Lover's Lament,
some
huh?
horrifically depressing thing that happens, some person getting the boot of life stamped right on their head.
See, that's why we're such a good team together, because you like Lover's Lament and I like them peppy, snappy, something fun. Hey, let's talk about the guy who achieved a goal. It only took him 4 years to do it.
How exciting.
And that is Eric Holcomb. It's Kendall and Casey, by the way.
The governor.
On 93 WIBC. So Eric Holcomb, your governor, your current governor, he celebrated Arbor Day on Friday by planting his millionth tree.
How many?
His millionth tree.
Wow, so he's planted one tree for every person he's totally screwed over in this state, Casey. That's amazing.
He set a goal back in 2020 to plant a million trees in 5 years, and he achieved that. He planted a cucumber magnolia on the lawn of the state house.
Think about, okay, so this is your governor, right?
Mm-hmm.
This is why a huge portion of Democrats in 2020 crossed over to vote for this guy. There were tons of Biden Holcomb voters. You saw the signs everywhere that totally offset all the Republicans who went over to vote for Rainwater, because Holcomb's priorities are these big lefty priorities. I mean, think about his goal in 5 years wasn't like, hey, we're going to fix out of control property taxes, or we're going to get the gas tax, you know, totally under control, or we're going to rein in out of control state spending, or we're going to hold a steady budget like Mitch Daniels has done with tuition at Purdue. His deal was, I'm going to plant a bunch of trees, mm-hmm. and that's going to be my... Sure, you can't afford to live in a home that has that tree, but you're going to have a lot of trees to look at as you're forced to walk on the street.
So they planted red and white oaks, swampy chestnuts, and also black walnuts, and he said with 1 million trees now dotting Indiana's landscape, we can preserve this love for our great outdoors for future generations of Hoosiers. Now, I don't have a problem with the trees.
Yeah.
They think that's fine. You want to plant a million trees across the great state of Indiana?
Time out, though.
But
he didn't plant a million trees.
Well, no, he didn't do it.
He's not Johnny Appleseed over here.
Yeah, the DNR did it. And that's fine. That's great. I appreciate that. And this is where the but comes in. But he could have coupled that with, as you said, fixing property taxes,
yes,
or lowering the gas
tax. But they're not priorities to him. I mean, look, it's just a broken record. The Holcomb is campaigning again this year through Brad Chambers. And I was told yesterday by a very reliable source, very, very, and you know when I do this, it's, you know, tack it on the bulletin board. A very reliable source, Holcomb desperately wanted to endorse Brad Chambers. But the polling is so bad that there's no chance Chambers is going to win, and Holcomb was not going to go out seen as a loser.
He's not going down that way.
He's
worried about his legacy. Did you see the big Jamie Rittenauer sign that's on Rockville Road?
Oh, how exciting.
There's a huge one. The dude and I got in a big conversation yesterday about who he was voting for, and he gave me his opinions.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know what? Maybe towards the end of the week, as we're just a week away from the primary, I'll give you my endorsement.
You know, my theory, Casey, is I used to early vote, and then I realized if I don't early vote, then mm-hmm. I can keep wasting rich Republican money all the way until Election Day, because they've got a list. Like, once you vote, they knock you off and they stop sending you the mailers.
Right.
And my goal, since these people are going to screw me for
make
the next 4 years,
money.
Is to make them waste as much rich Republican money as mm-hmm. I possibly can. So I wait until like 5 o'clock on Election Day to go vote.
All right, let's do this.
Tired of hearing Rob talk about all the bad news? Time to find your happy place. Turn that frown upside down. It's time for Shitting Rainbows with Rob.
This is the part of the show.
Yeah.
Actually, we've done this many times this hour already.
We're so positive today on a Monday. It's great.
We find something positive and we talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
And today we have to showcase the Indianapolis Star, Indy Star.
What?
Because they have done something worth talking about. And look, we have said, you know, we had Caitlin Lang on our show on Friday.
She did
Indy
a great
Star.
Job.
There's a lot of reporters at Indy Star who still do phenomenal work. Caitlin's one of them. And when they want to get to the bottom of stuff, they have the people out there that can do it.
Wasn't it the Indy Star that broke the Larry Nassar
sure,
story?
Sure. Yeah. There's a whole bunch of stuff Star's done, even in recent history, where when they put their mind to it, mm-hmm. that Brad Chambers piece that Caitlin did on him not paying those loans back, or his company not paying those loans back, was great. Now mm-hmm. they get squirrely because they make people like Greg Doyle the face of the newspaper, and mm-hmm. it really does a disservice to the good reporters over there who are doing good work. But they did something, and here's where we're at in our society where I have to give them credit for. They actually said my name this time in one of their,
really?
One of their pieces.
You're not just a local radio host. They actually knew your name.
So they were doing a preview on the 7th congressional district candidates. That's obviously, they've carved up a congressional district that is just Marion County, and Andre Carson is running for re-election. He has a nominal primary challenge. And then the thing most people are paying attention to is how bizarro the Republican side is, because this guy Gabe Whitley is running on the Republican side.
Mm-hmm.
And last time Indy Star did a piece on him, Now, you may remember the Indiana Capital Chronicle did a big expose how there's these donors that he claims. He claims he's raised all this money. Nobody can find the donors. They couldn't find the donors. My wife filed a complaint with the Indiana Election Division as well as the Federal Election Commission. And then Indy Star came out with a piece on Honest Gabe. He calls himself Honest Gabe. That's his name for himself. That he claimed to be endorsed by this veterans organization that nobody could find.
Right.
And it's always the same thing with him. You can't get a straight answer and somebody else is to blame. And so they did this very fabulous piece about this veterans organization that they couldn't locate. And they desperately tried and went through all the stuff. But when they had... mentioned me last time in their story on Gabe, I think they had referred to me as something like a local radio show host.
Yeah.
And it's like, come on,
everybody
Indy Star.
Knows who you're talking
everybody
about.
Everybody knows. I mean, we're kind of on the same level. Indy Star is the paper of record. We're the radio station of record. And then no offense if you're the Greenfield community radio station, but we're kind of, you know, it's worthy of saying who the person is. And this time they did a little expose on everybody running for the 7th congressional district.
And they did a write up of all of the challenges that Honest Gabe is facing.
Should I read part of their write up on?
Yeah.
This is okay.
If you want,
this guy legitimately though, and he has competition, but there's a chance he could be the Republican nominee for Congress. And there's part of me that kind of wants him to be the nominee for Congress because the longer he's out there, the more people are going to look into him and all the crap he's potentially pulled.
Mm-hmm.
I do worry if he loses, which he probably will. But if he loses, then people just lose interest in him. And the investigations and the reporting needs certainly to continue. Should we read?
I'm reading my favorite line, I think, in the whole article. It's not about you, Rob.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. But it says, Gabe told Indy Star via email that he decided to run for Congress since Republicans asked him to. Because of his experience working on congressional campaigns. Like, he was forced into it. I don't want to do this. But they need me.
Here's the write-up from Indy Star. I'm just going to read it verbatim.
Okay.
During Whitley's run for Evansville mayor in 2022, WIBC host Rob Kendall sued him for allegedly calling him a pedophile.
Mm.
After he dropped his campaign in early 2023, the Evansville Courier and Press reported he had raised thousands from donors who said they'd never heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
This year, in Whitley's run for Congress, Kendall's wife filed complaints with the Federal Election Commission alleging excessive campaign contributions and fraudulent donors. And prominent veterans advocates have accused Whitley of concocting a fictional veterans organization to pledge an endorsement.
He's only doing it because he was asked to. He doesn't want to do this. They're making
And
him.
My favorite part of all of this is the Marion County GOP, which is maybe the most inept organization in the entire state, has said nothing. Like, this guy could win. He could be your nominee for Congress, and you are stuck with him. And this guy could potentially drag everybody else on the rest of the ticket across the state down. And the state party, too, is just super silent about it.
He's in my district, so I actually get to vote
That's
on
right.
this race.
Has he earned your vote?
No. I'm going to say no. All right. You feel good? Your name is in the paper?
I wanted to give Indy Star credit. They actually wrote my name down this time.
All right. We got to get to the news. It's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. I can see her lying back in her sand. Well, you could put a fork in her because her VP hopes have been dashed. I believe she is done. It is 11:36 with Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC. We're talking about South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem. She now has just a 4% chance of being Donald Trump's VP.
No, she got no chance, Casey.
This after she admitted to killing her dog while her kids were at school. This was a 14-month-old dog, a puppy?
Yeah,
many
okay.
Would be, say.
Okay, so let's give a little background. As Kristi Noem is the governor. Yeah. Is it South Dakota? That's
South
right.
South Dakota.
South Dakota. I always get the two Dakotas confused. And she's been this rising star for a while. She's very well assembled and she's very conservative. And a lot of people have kind of, she was kind of a pro, individual liberty during COVID and kind of seen, she's obviously a woman, which Trump has some issues with, and has kind of been seen as one of the front runners. Well, she puts this book out. I don't know, is it out yet or it's coming out or it is out? Anyway, she tells this story in this book, and clearly she did it to sell books. And this is the danger you run into when you're, let's face it, anymore, you got to just shock people to get them to buy a book, right? Because you got to give them a reason to have you on the TV, have you on the circuits, have you on the radio shows, things that you want people to talk about, earned media like we're getting right now, where she gets this dog. And I'm summarizing this here. It's a much longer than this, but basically the gist of it is this dog's violent. It's biting. It's out of control. And her response to it was to shoot the dog.
Yeah.
Now, this isn't something necessarily that a lot of people haven't done, right? I mean, unfortunately, if an animal is totally out of control and a shelter won't take it or somebody can't rehome it or what choice do you have? You can't let it around your family. These things have happened before. However, to put it in a book, I mean, that's political suicide, because every conversation about her, and Tony said that this morning, and he's right. If she's the pick, every conversation with her is about killing the dog. Trump isn't even on the front and center, which that pissed him off more than the fact that he can't get his policies out there.
Right.
He wouldn't be the story. She would.
Right.
And so there's no way. If she wanted to be, I can't imagine she even wanted to be vice president. There's no way she's that stupid to think she could put this story in the book and think that's not going to come back and bite her in the ass.
Well, she was polling at 10% before the story came out, and now she's down to 4%, and she's clearly doing damage control now because she's saying, hey, I followed the South Dakota state law. This dog was attacking, killing livestock. It was aggressive, so I put it down. I think it's the manner in which she put the dog down that is shocking to most people.
Yeah, and again, like you said, I'm not saying she did anything illegal or anything like that. But the political world isn't the legal world.
Mm-hmm.
And the political world becomes that Kristi Noem is going to be this hotshot governor from South Dakota who shot her dog. I mean, look at what Romney went through, the thing where he put the dog on the roof. You can't have that. Trump is crazy enough and Trump is volatile enough. He's got to have somebody who is not a newsmaker, who can simply help relay his message. It's why someone like a Tim Scott is probably one of the leaders in the clubhouse, because Tim Scott is as pure as the wind-driven snow, and he's not going to make any headlines, and he's going to go out and articulate the message. And, you know, demographically, obviously, he probably helps check a box that Trump maybe feels he has an opportunity to score with black voters, and Scott can help him do that. But, I mean, for Noem, look, I mean, maybe just she doesn't want to be it. Maybe there's I just find it... I'm sort of the same place with her that I am with the Ursel Özdemir stuff, where it's like, there's no way Ursel Özdemir didn't have, you know, until this morning, I thought there's no way he didn't have an agreement with the city. There's no way he would have gone forward with that. And then I walked out of the interview with Tony going,
I don't think he does have an agreement with the city.
And it's sort of like the same thing with her, where it's like, there's no way if she wanted to be vice president, she'd be stupid enough to put this story in the book. But maybe she was.
She did. Okay, so she's saying that it was an effort to show people that she was capable of dealing with difficult, messy, and ugly situations.
You're a governor. Don't you have enough governor stories? You were a governor during COVID.
You have to pick the dog story.
You were one of the leaders of liberty and freedom during COVID. Isn't that enough to write about?
Well, now you've got Tim Scott in the lead at 22%, followed by Elise Stefanik at 9%, J.D. Vance 6%, Nikki Haley 6%, Ben Carson 5%, Marco Rubio at 5%, and then Kristi Noem at 4%.
Look, if we're in the box-checking game, and that box-checking game is, number one, with vice president, do no harm. Mm-hmm. That's the number one thing. Number two is... be able to articulate the message of the candidate at the top of the ticket. And number three, perhaps help you with demographics or a state. Tim Scott checks all three of those boxes. He's clearly not going to be, you know, have personal bad headlines. He's great at relaying Trump's message and being a loyal messenger. And again, while South Carolina is not a state that's in doubt, he's obviously, as Trump is clearly going to make a play for African-Americans, specifically African-American men, which shows he's made big inroads with. Tim Scott's a guy he can put up there and put out there and say, look at what you can do. Look at, if you believe in our message of liberty and freedom and believing in yourself and holding yourself accountable, look at what the opportunity is here versus what the Democrats have given you. Tim Scott looks on paper to be a great choice.
Isn't it amazing, though, that Kristi Noem is this, you know, rising star within the, you know, political system on the right, and then this one story is the one that could take her down?
But she had to know. There's no way she's that.
Well, she just did that infomercial. On the teeth, the dentist thing, well, that was a little weird, too. That was a little outside the box.
I think these people see a payday. Like, I think there's just so many of these politicians now who see politics as a payday or an access to a payday. And I think they just, I mean, that's the only logical explanation, because that story doesn't, other than help you get the book talked about.
Mm-hmm.
Let's face it, we're not talking about her book if that story's not in the book.
Yeah.
I just don't see what the upside on that would be, other than I'm trying to sell a book.
She has to know that there's so many pet lovers in the country who aren't going to see that as the way to handle that situation.
And again, it doesn't mean she did anything illegal. We're not saying that, but it's what affects you doesn't affect you legally, can certainly affect you politically. And those two worlds often, you know, while they're separate, you can get harmed in one and not the other.
Right. So we started off the show talking about how well you've aged, Rob, and how you look the same age as you did 20 years ago.
Yes. If you'd like to see that photo of me, a photo from me 17 years ago to today, you can go to at Robin Kendall on Twitter. And it's shocking how well I've done, Casey.
Okay. So now what is old? What age is considered old?
Yeah.
We're going to share that with you.
It's not 53, I'll tell you that.
It's not. And some telltale signs that maybe you're getting old. That's coming up. It's 93 WIBC.
Sometimes I think it's a shame when I get feeling better when I'm feeling no pain. Sundown, you better take care if I find you've been creeping around my back stairs. Sundown, you better take
care.
To a concert last night. We discussed that earlier in the program. You were probably out a little bit later. Did you feel like the music was too loud?
You know, Tom Petty once said, I don't know, but I've been told you never slow down, you never grow old.
Well, if the music's too loud, then you're too old, right?
Maybe you just have bad hearing.
There's a new study that came out that says people in their mid-60s believe that old age doesn't begin until around the age of 75. So you're not old yet, Rob
Kendall.
Well,
I saw this, and this was interesting. So like at the Judas Priest concert, we were, as we talked about earlier, some of the younger people there.
Sure.
But, you know, what's fascinating to me is how society has kind of changed. And as society has changed, the perception of aging has changed. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, you're a little more seasoned than me. But were you like me when you were a kid? If someone was 60, you thought, wow, that person is old.
Old, yes.
I mean, here's the best example I could come up with this. When I was a kid in 1998, Jack Nicklaus almost won the Masters at 58 years old. And he came from out of nowhere on Sunday. And the whole day it was like this ancient legend, you know, is, you know, barreling towards history. And boy, wouldn't this be incredible that this guy who they had to dig up out of the ground with the dinosaurs could pull this off. Well, now I look at it like with golf, there's a bunch of these 58-year-old or 60-year-old guys who still could run out there. And if they got it right for a weekend or 4 days, could win the Masters. Like, no, it wouldn't even be that big of a deal. I think aging has changed because people take better care of themselves. People kind of, you know, are more in tune to that they're, hey, I'm going to live longer. So, you know, I'm going to, you know, put a little more stock in what I put into my body. I just think that the perception of societies with older people doing more things, older people are still being mainstream actors. You've got musicians. Heck, these guys that I listen to are in their 70s and are still rip roaring.
Look at Mick Jagger, 80 years old, and he's still running across the stage.
I mean, that Judas Priest thing last night was the 50th anniversary. I just think the perception as kind of this, the baby boomer generation has come into their elder years. They've sort of stayed very active. They stayed very involved. And so it's not the way it was when their parents turned, say, 70 years old, where it was Matlock, Walter Cronkite, and knitting socks.
Okay, well, so you mentioned Matlock. And when I was younger, when I think of some of the actors and TV shows that I watched, people like Ann B. Davis, who was Alice on the Brady Bunch, or Ted Knight from Mary Tyler Moore. You know, or even the Golden Girls, right? Popular show. They seemed really, really old.
Yeah.
They're younger. They were younger then than I am currently.
Right.
And I look back and I think, oh my gosh, they just look so old. I think a lot of it has to do with how people are acting and how they feel and how they present themselves as being younger as well.
Well, and again, I think it's also the sort of active connection, I guess, is the word that I would come up with. So many people now, and maybe it's because of social media, people stay in touch. There's more active connections by which people kind of find groups and they find kind of do things. Mm-hmm. And many of them do involve some level of physical activity. And I think that's part of it.
I distinctly remember my grandfather's 70th birthday.
Yeah.
Now, isn't that crazy, the things you just randomly remember? Now, my grandfather lived to be 92 years old, so there's no reason.
You've got good genes.
It wasn't like, oh, this was his final birthday. That's why it's in my mind. It was his 70th birthday. And I just remember as a little kid being like, that is so old.
Yeah.
And now it's like, hey, you got Bruce Springsteen on tour at 75, Mick Jagger and the Rolling Stones are 80 plus. And it's like, I was just impressed my grandfather was still alive, much as he wasn't out playing concerts 3 hours a night or doing, you know, athletic events or whatever. So I just think we have the whole way society views things has shifted.
Well, seniors now think that 75 is the new 65, but I've got a list here to help you out. And these are some things that are telltale signs that you, in fact, are getting old.
Oh.
And I don't know. I can relate to a few on this list. Let's see how you do. If you're at least 10 years older than anyone else at the bar, that means you're getting old.
Yeah.
If your varicose veins are ruining your look.
That's a good one.
If the dress is a little too short and you want to cover up, maybe that's a problem.
Yeah.
You refer to anyone younger than you as a young person. I am so guilty of that. I do that all the time. In fact, the dude and I were talking about Kevin the other day, and I said, he's a good kid. nearly 30.
You young people.
If you hear a teenager talking and have absolutely no idea what they're saying, that means you might be getting old. If you have children and your name suddenly becomes Billy's mom or Joe's dad or Mr. Kendall, when you become Olivia's dad versus Rob, that means you're getting old. When you realize that music just isn't the same as it was back in your day, this is a sign that you're getting old. And if you don't need to bring your driver's license because you know you're not going to get carded, that definitely means that you're getting old.
Well, those are all perfect. Those are all very, very, very good. Here's the thing, though, Casey, and you know me, I'm the last person to ever toot my own horn.
Of course.
However, and I credit this to my grandmother because she also lived to be 92 years old. And very late into her life, she still looked like she was about 60.
Yeah.
You know, we posted that photo earlier of me going to an event with my buddy Scott, who I went to the Judas Priest concert with last night.
Yeah.
17 years. And the difference, I feel like
you look the same.
I'm still pretty much the kind of the same weight, and thanks to We Grow Hair Indie, the same hair, and I don't feel like there's wrinkles all over me.
Right, and you're not wearing glasses because of your 2010 vision.
That's right. So I you know, and you can see that photo, by the way, at Rob M. Kendall on Twitter. We got Casey tagged in that as well. I think, you know, now internally I could be a complete mess and I could be out of here by the time I'm 55. But what is it, you know, carry a beautiful corpse or whatever.
Right.
I think thus far, you know, knocking wood, I'm holding up my end of the bargain.
You're going to be okay.
Yeah.
And you don't even need the Botox.
Yeah. I give all the credit to my grandma Kendall because, well, it is the, and my dad was the same way. My dad, he looked incredibly young until like probably he had a full head of dark hair well into his 50s.
Yeah.
And I think that's a big part of it. It's weight and hair and, you know,
lifestyle.
If you haven't spent your life in a smoke shop, you know, if you don't have
how you take care of yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, sometimes it's just God just gives you good genetics.
This is true. And it sounds like you do have some good genes, especially if you had two grandparents living to the age of 92.
Well, I think what God said to me when I came out is he said, you're going to be very short and people are going to make fun of you for being very short, but you're going to look very young,
so
well into middle age.
Doing it.
That's a trade-off.
You may be vertically challenged, but we're going to give you some other good stuff. You'll be around forever. All right, Small King, it's time for us to go. Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Kevin, and thank you for listening today. It's Kendall and Casey on 93 WIBC.